All right, so let's. Oh my God, there we go. Now we're hot. We're hot and we're streaming. Holy crap! I swear.
How about that?
And people are listening and probably going, what the hell is going on over at the Mead House tonight? A little too much mead, people, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, and I just got through setting this whole thing up. The mics are hot. Everything's working. Had good volumes, everything. And I got the crew in, Aaron, Mississippi. Jeff's not going to be with us here tonight. And pushed all the buttons and opened the show. The music's playing, and I look up, and there's, like, no volume on the output. It's like, who am I talking to, you know? But, hey, we are on the air now, and welcome to the Mead House. Gosh, now I lost my place. What were we talking about before we were so rudely interrupted?
Making mead.
Well, back in the saddle again, I think, is how I initially opened a show that nobody heard. We were on break for a couple of weeks, so it's kind of good to be back, you know, doing something constructive. Let's just start off with the usual stuff. The Facebook deal, I went to Facebook tonight and scrambling around. We had new windows installed in our place today. So it was like, you know, I had to pull everything away from the walls and get everything covered up. And it was just a pain in the neck. So we were kind of scrambling around, getting everything, all the furniture put back and everything. I really didn't get a chance to sit down and really peruse through the Facebook pages, but I did manage to find one. This comes from Chad Wiltz on the Mead Facebook page, and he writes, and there's a picture that accompanies his posting over there, and he's heard it preached often about the importance of headspace in the primary. Oh, don't we know? But he's also, you know, he says he sees pictures of, you know, regularly of exploding carboys or airlocks that are just full of mead and overflowing. Well, he posted a couple of pics of a 10-gallon, some kind of a berry melomel that he's doing. And he's doing it in a 15-gallon Speedel fermenter. And the reason why, if you look at his two pictures at the Mead Facebook, it's understandable because the first picture shows his melomel just after he pitched his yeast. The second picture shows what looks like about a foot and a half of stuff almost to the top of this 15-gallon carboy. And yeah, no kidding. You need the headspace. It's kind of funny to go look at his pictures over there, but he did get the message by, you know, doing what the rest of us do, kind of cruise around, look, watch, listen, learn, and don't do what other people have done. So, Chad Wiltz, awesome post, buddy. And I told you I'd mention your name tonight. So there you go. The Mead House here on Tuesday nights. Like I said, Jeff is away tonight, so he won't be joining us. He'll be back next week, I'm sure. Probably getting a few emails from him between now and then, I'm sure. Mississippi Chris in the house. Aaron Martin alongside. What are you guys drinking, Aaron? What's your glass tonight?
So for me, tonight I'm actually finishing off the last bottle of the Melovino mead that Sergio sent up to us. I think I saved the best for last, drinking some of his Midnight Jack. This is the dark fruit mead that has black currants, blackberries, black cherries, and black raspberries. And I have to say, this is probably one of my favorite meads, if not the best meat I think I can recall having. Just a really intense fruit flavor that you're getting there up front, and it's just really nicely balanced and rounded out by, you know, kind of the tartness from the fruits and the sweetness from the honey. Really enjoying this one.
Wow, amazing. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Goes down easy.
Mississippi Chris, please don't tell me it's a Starbucks.
No, no more Starbucks for me.
What you got in your cup?
Well, I've got a grapefruit tonic. It's tonic water, grapefruit juice, and a little bit of lime juice. Kind of doing the healthy thing tonight.
That's it? No libation, no alcohol, not even some rum?
I got a broadcast to do, so I better not.
while the rest of us sit here and drink ourselves into oblivion, Chris is going to keep us straight as an arrow here.
JD, next week we may need to put Chris in control of the sound.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, maybe I should be running the equipment. We wouldn't be.
You know what? Absolutely. You know what? And I can fix you up, too, bud. I can fix you up.
I'm lucky to be able to check my email, so you don't want
me doing that. Yeah. Just as a guy who spends his days operating on people, and he hates computers. I mean, go figure. He does everything on his smartphone. I mean, his email, he cruises the internet, everything on his smartphone. So,
and I'm about to upgrade, too. I'm getting the newest, latest, and greatest. And so it's going to be even bigger and better.
What, the Samsung 7 Note?
I'm getting the new iPhone.
Oh, iPhone
7. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, stay away from that Samsung deal. Apparently, the battery's been exploding in them, so... bad news there.
iPhone 7 Plus, so we'll see how it works out.
There you go. Well, what's JD drinking tonight? JD is having the final glass out of a bottle of Pinot Noir. It's called Raven. This is a home wine kit that we made here, appropriately named Raven. It's my wife's favorite style of wine, and it's a little bit early still, starting to develop. We took some samples when we bottled, and it was still, boy, it was really kind of rough around the edges, but even after just a few months in the bottle, it's starting to come around. So I'm hoping by Christmas time they're going to be pretty good, at least good enough to give away. So not quite, not quite $20 bottle, but just a tad over the $2 chuck that you might get at Trader Joe's. So, hey, what the heck, you know? I kind of wish Jeff was here tonight because I wanted to continue on a little bit further with this Braggot thing. So I guess Jeff is just going to... Jeff, if you're listening, you're just going to have to catch up, bud. You know, we left off a couple of weeks ago. Well, first of all, what did you guys do over the couple of weeks we were off? Aaron, you did some traveling. I saw the pictures.
I did, yeah. So the first week I was actually in Cleveland on a business trip, but then the second week I took a little vacation with the wife, and we did a little tour of Wisconsin. So from Milwaukee, which is kind of the southeast portion of the state, we went over to Madison, and actually while we were there had the chance to tour a really wonderful meadery, the Boss Meadery. The owner, Colleen Boss, gave us a very informative tour, and we actually helped her celebrate, I think it was the 4-year anniversary of her meadery there. So that was really fun. Other than that, we just kind of cruised up north to the northern part of the state, up by Lake Superior, and just had a real nice relaxing time. Drink a lot of beer and drink a lot of mead. So now getting back into the swing of things.
Perfect. Madison, isn't that, aren't they, isn't they, weren't they famous for the boat races, Miss Bardall, Miss Budweiser, Miss this, Miss that?
You know,
is
I am
the same
not
Madison?
I'm not sure, to tell you the truth.
The hydroplane boats, isn't that what kind of where it all started? Was in Madison somewhere?
Sure could be. I may have to look into that and get back to you, because I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll have to look it up too, but it just rings a bell. Mississippi, what'd you do during your 2 weeks?
Well, I've been focusing mostly on one of my big hobbies, which is leather work, and I've been doing a lot of that. Suddenly, all of a sudden, I got all these projects coming in, and still have some waiting. In fact, you've got one waiting for me that I haven't gotten to yet. So, I've pretty much had in all my spare time. That's what I've been doing, and.
I've been through so many revisions on the design that it, you know, don't feel like you're rushed or anything. So,
well, that's the problem. See, the longer I wait, the more you're going to keep changing things.
Make it
more done, so you can't change anything else.
Make it more complicated, huh?
Yeah. You'll
say
I'm stuck with it now. So.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we still need to talk about that, too. But like I said, there is no great hurry. I imagine I'll be here for a few more years at least. And we'll talk about that little project here in a little while. Well, you know what? Now's as good a time as any anyway. We just bump this one up to top of the list. My 2 weeks off was basically spent building this, this kegerator project. And I tried to document, as much as I could. And I put a little story about it up on the website, themeadhouse.com. Oh yeah, we do have a website, themeadhouse.com. We also have a Facebook. You can get to it from themeadhouse.com. It's just simply the Mead House on Facebook.
For a long time I wanted to brew beer, and I finally got around to doing it. And the bottling thing, I can see now where these beer brewers, you know, I mean, bottling is just a pain in the ass, I swear. And you don't, you're kind of stuck. You're limited on what you can brew too, because if you bottle your beer, you have to mix priming sugar in it to get the carbonation, and you have really no control over it at all, other than the amount of priming sugar that you might use. And of course, there's even formulas out there for that. And I think it's roughly 4 to 5 ounces for a 5 gallon batch of beer, but. I mean, if there's any kind of residual sugars in there at all or anything, I mean, they're going to get chewed up by whatever yeast might be in there chewing on the priming sugar as well. So you're kind of limited on what you can brew. So I thought, you know, maybe it's time. And I started looking around and wound up ordering a whole kegging system. I mean, the kegs, the beer lines, the spigots, the everything, CO2 tank, the whole nine yards. And picked up a little cheap Danby refrigerator. This, of course, after doing lots of research and really looking out there, you know, what people were doing, the kinds of refrigerators people were using, and it runs the full gamut from filthy, dirty, used refrigerators that people pick up for like $10 to brand spanking new giant, you know, 48 cubic foot freezers. I mean, it runs the full gamut.
A popular one out there is this little Danby mini fridge. It holds two kegs and a CO2 canister cartridge. You know, a cartridge. Hell, it's a tank. It's a 5-pound tank. I think you can even you could probably get a 10-pounder in there if you wanted to, but you'd only be able to put one keg in. But So I got this refrigerator and, you know, laid my plans out and went to work on it. And so that's what I did for my 2 weeks. It's got a tile top on it. I had discussions with Mississippi even about what I was going to do for the surface and everything. And, I mean, it went from copper to wood to different things. I wound up using tile, got it all laid down, grouted in. I need to seal it up now. That's the last thing I need to do to the tile. But everything works. Hooked up the beer lines. I had made a 5-gallon batch of a porter, kind of a coffee porter. A little variation on the recipe. I had it sitting on about, not quite 2 ounces, about 1.4 ounces of dark roast coffee bean, just the raw bean, not crushed, not ground, not nothing, just the whole bean. And it came out pretty good. My wife likes it, and that was the important part. So, of course, there's a, I guess the part of this whole deal, I mean, the reason why I wound up with a kegerator, the explanation that I was going to use for my wife was, you know what, honey, I'm going to make you a beer, your favorite beer, but I need this kegging system in order to put it in. See, that's how it works.
Like how you parlayed that. Well done, sir.
You know?
I'm taking notes.
Yeah, if you want a kegging system at home, make your wife's favorite beer, and tell her that you know what, honey, I in order to make it come full circle, I got to have one of these kegging systems, you know.
So, if any of our listeners have a good recipe for a good grapefruit Hefeweizen, give us a call.
So that's what I did for my 2 weeks, and we're awful proud of it. It's a two-spigot little deal. Chris is going to help me out with a kind of a tower thing. We're going to build out of wood and leather. And I'm just, gosh, Chris, that's so many freaking ideas. And I've got pictures of, you know, that I've saved off of different places that I've been and seen. You know, what other people have done, and like I said, I mean, it's gone from one revision to another about once every other day, so.
Sometimes the best thing you can do is send me some pictures of what you have, send me some measurements of what you require, and then just forget about it and let me do my thing, and, you know, because sometimes when you get more than, you stare at something for so long and you sort of run out of ideas, and it's good to have someone new just to come in and do something. So
that's true. That's true.
So maybe I can just look at what you've got and get some measurements from you, and we can just go from there.
Well, you know, I spent, gosh, you know, sit here for hours and hours and hours going through all these. And homebrewtalk.com is a great place to start. And they've got a section in there about home brewing. And it even breaks it down into sections on all different kinds of things. Of course, one form section they have in there is about building kegerators and keezers. And there's just countless pictures of what people have done. So, yeah, I went through about half of those. There's roughly 400 some odd pages of building these kegerators, and they all have pictures. So yeah, I got lots of pictures and got some good ideas. But you know, it and I knew absolutely nothing about carbonating, other than what I read, what came in the instructions for the first beer, which was that pumpkin deal that I did. And that involved just mixing 4 ounces of priming sugar in some hot water and adding that to the bottling bucket and then, bottle your beer. But that is such a pain. Goes through the whole bottle capping thing. And I even went out and bought a fancy, fancy-dancy bottle capper. And I imagine we'll still bottle some, too. I'm very interested in that beer gun. What did you call it? The Blickman beer gun, I think, Chris?
Yeah, the Blickman. That's what you want.
Yeah, and that'll allow you to still bottle, fill growlers, that kind of thing, and do it the right way. So, but that was my 2 weeks off. And like I said, you can go to themeadhouse.com. It's pretty well documented up there, what I did, what I used, what it looks like. The Danby refrigerator is the refrigerator of choice, apparently, for a lot of people who are, limited on space. And it's easy to work with, and they're cheap. I mean, I think we paid like $125 for it at Costco. So, at that point, I really didn't care about the warranty. I mean, when you drill the 2-inch hole in the top of the refrigerator, it pretty much, your warranty pretty much goes out the window. So,
you're going to need that Blickman beer gun, though, because if that only holds 2 kegs, I know you. I know how you brew. And, you start a new batch every third day. So.
I know. I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, and when I, looking around, he asked me, he says, how many projects you got going? And I turn around in my chair, and I'm looking behind me, and I'm thinking, holy crap, I got like 35 gallons of stuff. I've got 20 gallons of wine. I just put 5 gallons of beer in a keg. I've got, 6 gallons of mead. And both of my fermenters are empty. Can you believe that? And they've been empty for a week and a half or more than that.
There is a limit. There is a limit on home brewing at which point you have to apply for a license. Might want to check into that.
Yeah, I think it's like 200 gallons. It's 100 gallons per adult here. And I think that's the federal law, if I'm not mistaken. But
you hit that like, what, April?
Yeah, more like February. But I got so much going on. Wine, I've got a 5 gallon wine that I've got to get in bottles here just shortly, because they're going to have to sit for about 4 or 5 months. And this next project, I'm really, we're not done really going through this whole Braggot thing yet. And I've been looking at different ideas of recipes, and I've pretty much nailed it down to one. And I'm going to do this bourbon barrel porter. It's a kit beer from Northern Brewer. And we're going to one-up it with some honey, and that's about all I'm going to do to it, is just add the honey. So, I don't know what to expect out of it. Looking to take the alcohol up to somewhere around, I really don't want to go much more than about 10%. I mean, I don't know how you guys are approaching yours. Chris, talk about your idea, because we were kind of tossing around a couple of different recipes. I settled on one, which left you open for that other one that we were discussing. What's your theory? Or do you have any direction you want to go with it?
You know, I've been thinking about it, and actually I talked to my wife about it, and we have decided on the Irish Red Ale. Rather than the stout. So that's a recipe that I already had, but the recipe that I had had no specialty grains. It was just a dry malt extract. It had a dark malt extract that was used. And really the only thing that made it an Irish ale was the fact that I used an Irish ale yeast. But I guess for this experiment that we're all going to do, I'm going with a kit, and it's an actual Irish red ale kit that's going to have specialty grains. And, I'm like you, I'm going to make some adjustments to the kit. I'm going to go with a different hop, a couple of different hops and some different hop profiles, different quantities. As far as gravity, I really haven't dialed it in yet. I've given it a little thought, and I'm thinking probably like it's going to end up around 11%. We'll just have to see. I think I'm going to stick with that, rehash it, and see what we can come up with on it.
Yeah. Aaron, have you been looking at recipes or?
I have.
Looking at, yeah.
Yeah, and just, of course, I know we've talked a little bit about the red ale, Irish ale, on some previous podcasts. I think that that's a style that would lend itself very well to a Braggot. Red ales, Irish ales kind of have a pretty nice malt, sweet profile, flavor profile to start with. And I think if you add in some honey on top of that, Sounds like that'd be a good one. So, and JD, yours sounds really awesome as well. So for me, what I'm looking at putting together for this recipe would be a black IPA. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's kind of a cross between two different styles of beer. So for those of you that like a real dark, roasty type of a beer, like a stout or a porter, it gives you that kind of a dark malt profile, but then it combines it with like an India Pale Ale hop profile as well. So it's a very, very intensely hopped beer as well. Looking at this recipe, I kind of am, at this stage of the game, blending the Black IPA kit recipe, which is also available from the Northern Brewer, with the Northern Brewer's Braggot recipe, actually a recipe that I have used in the past a couple of times. It's the one I sent to you, JD. So in terms of the starting gravity on this, it looks like it would be about 1.110 of a starting gravity. So that's kind of what I'm looking at putting together, and I think it would be kind of an interesting recipe. I really like black IPAs, just the style of beer. I think it's something that would be really different if you kind of kicked it up a notch with the honey.
Yeah. I was just looking at this recipe for this bourbon barrel porter. Now, I still really haven't gotten that involved with hops yet, but it uses Golding's and Chinook hops. The Chinook are the long boil, the 60-minute boil. They go in right at the beginning, but the other two, one's at 15, the other one at 5 minutes. So, I know there's, flavorings come out of one set, bitters come out of others, aromas come out of, even a third. And so I don't know what these hops are going to contribute. So that I need to look up next. I need to figure out, Golding's. Is that what I want to use for this? I mean, or do I want to go with something else?
That's interesting. Those are the two that I'm going to be using. I'm going to use the Chinook and the East Kent Goldings. So, Yeah, the Goldings are going to be the aroma.
And you're pretty familiar with those, or you've had experience with those before, I take it?
Limited. Very limited. And to get me to ask to answer what they each of them do, no, I can't do that. But
you know, I wonder if there's a list, some kind of a document floating around out there that you can look down the list and get some kind of a profile on what these hops contribute.
I'm sure there is, and you know, on most of the homebrew sites that you order supplies from, they'll have some sort of description along with each kind of hop. So I really need to look that up because I may end up going with Eroica instead of Chinook. I'm not sure yet. I think what I need to do is you and I probably need to collaborate on it, figure out what you're going to do, and then because I've got some options on mine. And so, you know, I may, like, for instance, I could go with Eroica instead of Chinook, or I could go with Cascade or Centennial instead of the Goldings. So I don't know. I'd like for all of us to do something different. So if you're going to do the Chinook and Goldings, I can switch mine over. But with this being an Irish, I don't think it would matter too much because the East Kent Goldings, they're going to, I don't know, in my mind, they take it more toward an English ale than an Irish.
Well, I just found a, I got to make the damn thing bigger so I can read it. I just found this on homebrewstuff.com. This is Hop Profiles. I'm going to bookmark this and then maybe cut and paste into a document that I can just kind of put away in my documents. But Golding, 4 to 6% alfalfa, or alfalfa acids, what the hell. Domestic finishing hop, refined, gentle, fragrant, and pleasant with flowery tones, has produced some of England's best bitters. Used for all English-style beers, ales, ESB bitter, Belgian-style ales, barley wines. Substitutes are East Kent Goldings, Chris. Fugle, I guess, Willamette. I think that's a Styrian. I don't have my other glasses on. Styrian Golding. Fragrant, pleasant, with flowery tones. So is that something you're looking for?
Yeah, sort of. That's more toward the English ale. I may go with some of the others. I don't know.
See, now right off the bat, okay, I'm thinking flowery. I mean, what is this flower stuff? I'm looking at a bourbon barrel porter, and without, you know, if I just ran the recipe the way it is, this has a 16-ounce of bourbon that goes in secondary along with some oak. So I'm not quite sure how the refined, gentle, fragrant, and pleasant with flowery tones is. I don't know if that's even suitable for Braggot, or this beer that I'm looking at. Well, Braggot, ultimately it'll be a Braggot. Aaron, what's your...
So, I just in the group an email here, this is a table that I had put together maybe a few weeks ago, JD, when we had that discussion about the brewing process and the different ingredients. It's not a comprehensive list of hops. I think it's a list of about 9 pretty popular hops, and the Goldings and the Chinook, Cascade, those are all on there. It lists out some of the flavor profiles, the alpha acid percentages, as well as recommended beer styles. Now, I compiled this information from a couple of sources. Number one, the Joy, Complete Joy of Home Brewing by Charlie Papazian, and then also just looking at information from the Northern Brewer website. So as far as the Goldings hops, it looks like those are used as like aroma hops, you know, very popular aroma hops for brown ales, porters and stouts, bitters, pale ales, not super hoppy beer styles, but you know, if that's you know, your bourbon barrel, is it a porter style? Seems like it could potentially be a good fit there. It's not to say that there aren't other hops that aren't even on this list that would be a good substitute as well, but that might be a good starting point as well for just like a reference guide.
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to hops, I'm thinking something that would complement the bourbon component here somehow. The malt is 1 pound of English chocolate malt. I don't know what English chocolate is, but English chocolate malt, a 0.5 pound of English dark crystal, and 0.5 pound of English black malt. And then there's 2 pounds of wheat malt and 6 pounds, 6.3 pounds of dark malt extract. Well, I guess those are the grains. The grains are the English chocolate malt, the English dark crystal, and the English black malt. And then the extracts are the wheat malt, dried malt extract, and then the 6 pounds of dark malt extract syrup. So, and that actually goes in at 15 minutes. That's, wow, 6 pounds at 15 minutes. Wow, different.
Yeah, I'm thinking the way you describe those would go good with that style, JD. It seems to me, especially, yeah, because it's going to be, I mean, I think it's going to be malty for sure, and I mean extra malty actually. So, yeah, a very light floral aroma, and you got to remember that's not flavor profile, that's just aroma. So,
well, but I'm wondering if that aroma won't conflict with the bourbon and oak at the same time, though, because I mean, typically bourbon doesn't smell like flowers. It's going to smell like some kind of level of oaking, and you're going to usually get some kind of a vanilla component out of that.
Yeah, but floral and vanilla go good together. They complement each other.
Yeah.
Well, vanilla comes from a flower, so.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it would go fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, and I've even given thought to even just dropping, you know, maybe one or two vanilla beans. I really don't want to get carried away with the vanilla, but maybe dropping one or two vanilla beans in just for the heck of it. The three components, the bourbon, the oak, and vanilla, all go very well together. And then, of course, I mean, you know, then we're talking about the honey. I'm going to use the wildflower honey that I get here. And
there's the big wild card here. We've chosen these styles, but what's the honey going to do to it? How's it going to change? You know, so that's the big wild card that we've got to figure out.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, the honey is going in, you know, that's the last thing to go in. That's the very last thing to go in. You know, because when I on my cool down, before I pitch the yeast, that's when I want to add the honey and take my gravity because, you know, I have no idea how much honey it's going to take to get my gravity up to, you know, where I want it. I'm only looking for about 10% ABV. I really don't want to go more than that.
And that's sort of what I'm looking at. And one reason is because the Irish red ale yeast that I'm going to be using has a 12% tolerance. And yeah. So I was thinking if I can get this thing to go about 10% dry, that would allow me to go ahead and bottle condition this rather than keg it. And that way, it's not my preferred way of doing it, but for those people listening who want to brew along with us and don't have a kegging system, then it would be something they could do as well. So
yeah.
I'm thinking I may just go old school on this and bottle condition it.
Yeah. Well, and see, mine's going to go right into a keg. It's going to come out of secondary and go into a keg. In fact, it might even spin. Well, it will. I mean, I'm going to come out of secondary, wait till it all clears and everything, then put it in a keg. I thought about just dumping it into a keg. That's been done before too. But I really don't want to put up with the mess at the bottom of the keg either. I'd just soon have it all cleared out before I do that. But the part that I'm stuck at with this comes to the honey. Now, typically, you can't just dump a whole bunch of sugar into a beer recipe because many times I've read the yeast isn't going to put up with that. I mean, it's like, they're going to go like, whoa, what are you doing? And, they're not going to do anything. And so you got to be very careful about how much fermentable sugar you add to, to this whole thing, especially when you're using these beer yeasts, from what I understand. So that presents go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that's a little bit of what I was alluding to earlier when I had mentioned I'm kind of blending together two recipes. So looking at the black IPA recipe itself, it actually calls for a little bit north of 9 pounds of a dark malt syrup. And then what I'm thinking is, rather than just adding in a bunch of honey to that, because like you say, the yeast, and particularly these ale yeasts, may not handle that high of a gravity so well. So what I was thinking about doing is scaling it back and taking it down from 9 pounds of the dark malt syrup to about 6, and then adding in maybe another 9 pounds of honey, and then potentially using the D47 wine yeast instead. Again, that's what I've used for the braggots that I've made before and have actually been very pleased with the results that I've gotten. So that's kind of what I'm penciling in at this point, and definitely interested to hear what both of your thoughts are about that approach. The other thought that I had is maybe just scale back the amount of honey and malt extract as well, for that very reason that you're talking about, JD.
Yeah. Well, the interesting. Now my question is, how is the yeast going to? Yeah, I'm looking. I mean, the bottom line with my project, I'm looking for more of a beer-like quality to it. So, how much is that going to detract? How much is the yeast going to add or detract from that flavor profile? I wonder if you go to a wine yeast instead of a beer or an ale yeast.
And I think it's a legitimate question. I definitely would imagine you'd get more of a traditional beer style or beer flavor from a beer yeast. If you think back to that braggot that I sent to you, what were your thoughts about that? Did you find that to have more of a wine character or more of a beer character to it?
I thought it had more of a beer character to it. It just needed just that tad more hops to it. And I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great. And it was, to me, it tasted, it had a beer quality to it. That's why I liked it.
So that was with the D47. The malt and hops are going to give you a significant beer-like quality on their own, too. So just something to think about.
The other meat also had a beer quality to them.
You had mentioned that, too, even the traditionals as well.
Yeah, I could definitely taste a beer quality, and I'm wondering if it didn't get some of that from the failed attempt that you did with the beer yeast.
Definitely could be. I've hypothesized about that myself, actually.
Yep.
It's
not a bad thing at all. It was good. It just I just couldn't figure out where that beer quality was coming from.
Yeah, that definitely
could be.
I sometimes wonder just exactly how much does yeast contribute to, you know, the flavor, the end result. I've done some just plain Jane ciders, just 5 gallons of just Mott's apple juice and dumped a Nottingham ale yeast in, nothing added, no nothing, take it all the way dry, and it tastes like a beer. it's got a beer quality, but there's nothing beer about it other than the yeast. I've used 05, the SAF ale yeast 05, on a cider, and had the same thing. But that one I put sugar in, ate through all the sugar and everything, but it had kind of a beer-like quality to it. So,
I think it definitely has a significant impact, and I'll tell you as well, I remember serving that same Braggot that, you know, you had said had kind of a beer-like quality. I remember serving that to a friend of mine, and he just called it wine. He's like, oh, this is good wine. Yeah. And I remember being kind of surprised by that, thinking, you know, it looks like a beer. It's got a foam head, you know. It's hoppy, somewhat hoppy at least. Like, to me, it's definitely beer-like, but it's just interesting to me how, in this case, two different people could perceive it in two different ways.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm not quite. I mean, I know this is the recipe I'm going to do. I'm definitely going to do this bourbon barrel porter. I like the idea, Aaron, of maybe scaling back some of the malt and substituting, the honey in there. And maybe a little extra honey to maybe get that 10% that I'm looking for. But
yeah, that's a decision that I've got to make too, because I really haven't decided which direction I want to go. Do I want it to be more beer-like or more mead-like? And if I do want it to be more beer-like, I'm certainly not going to scale back the malt. That's for sure. If you do, then there goes your beer flavor.
Yeah.
So I really haven't decided what I'm going to do yet with that one.
Patty Mackey is listening in, apparently. I just got an email from her. She says that Northern Brewer Bourbon Barrel Porter kit is a winner. Made it for her husband's 50th birthday, brewed it again, and entered it in a local brew contest, took first place. So,
nice.
So she says you should brew it first as the kit, and then try it as a Braggot. Patty, that might be a pretty good idea.
Ooh.
That's just another for him to make another 5 gallons.
Yeah, you just pay. Yeah, get me another. Make another. Yeah. So here you go. But congratulations on the first place, Patty, and thanks for the email. In fact, if you want to call the show and talk about it with us, please feel free. The number is 818-921-4680, 818-921-4680. In fact, if anybody's listening to the live show, you're more than welcome to call us anytime during the show and talk about it.
Patty, you've got my email. Why don't you let me know how that little project we were talking about is coming along with the cherries?
Oh yeah, we got to update the cherry melmel too.
Yeah, I gave Patty a slight variation on it. She was looking for something a little bit differently, a little bit different than what we did on air. So I sent her a slight variation, and I don't know what she decided to do about that, but I think she went with it, and I haven't heard from her how it turned out.
Yeah. Well,
to say something else, too, before. I'm sorry, J.D.
Go ahead.
Interrupt you. If Eric Bosick is listening, sorry, I haven't gotten back with you. He emailed me a while back asking about the heart murmur project. And, you know, we were kind of talking about that hot and heavy for a while, and then it kind of fell on the back burner. It's still here. It's still going, and I will get you the recipe. In fact, I'll get everybody the recipe. Life gets in the way, and things have been busy, but hey, don't give up on me. Just bear with me, and Eric, I'll get with you as soon as I can.
Yeah, there you go. I still have some more questions, and I still have some more reading to do, and I gotta just sit down and go through this hop list and look at these hops and get a little more in tune with them and, you know, figure out what that's all about. The only thing that scares me about this honey edition is, you know, like I said, I mean, reading up on these braggots and all these beer yeast. Now, that's if I go to the beer yeast, is, you know, knowing that, you know, a lot of these beer yeast don't put up with a lot of honey. So now you're talking maybe step feeding the honey in. But then, you know, how do you know add to get to that 10%? So there's much more to this that I probably need to learn first before I, just dump stuff in the fermenter.
I think they're going to put up with a lot more than you think. When you take a beer yeast and you start putting it in mead and other things, that's a game changer. Everything changes at that point. And, who was it? Bray Denard, who came up with the Bray's 1 month mead, and he uses a Belgian yeast, Belgian ale yeast. And, he actually had some trouble there for a while getting the thing to kind of slow down because it just went wild when he put it in the honey must. And he actually did one, I believe. I think I read where he step fed one of the meads using that ale yeast and ended up getting it up to something ridiculous like 18 or 19% ABV or something. So,
wow.
I think there's probably more there that it's capable of doing than we're giving it credit for. So,
yeah.
You know, just one other thought along those lines, you could always start off with the ale yeast, and if you have, you know, a failure to launch or it doesn't start to ferment, then you could always go back and pitch something else as well. So another thought there. And then one other thought I have while we're still on the topic of braggots here, earlier in the show, we were talking about the importance of having headspace in your fermentation vessel. And just a word of caution for those that have not brewed a Braggot before. In the couple that I've done, I usually use a 6.5 gallon glass carboy is my primary fermenter. And even with, 1.5 gallons of extra headspace on the top there, these Braggots just go nuts with the craisin or the foam, the yeast foam that collects at the top, which I even got with the D47, interestingly. And in the first one that I did, it actually clogged up my airlock, and I had a little bit of a mead volcano. So I would definitely consider getting yourself like a nice blow-off tube or something like that in case you do have a very active fermentation with a very, big craisin.
Yeah.
Yeah, and without any knowledge of this, just working on my own theory, I would probably attribute that to the protein content in the malts.
That would make sense.
Yeah, because that's going to form, any kind of amino acid like that, if you can ever get it to foam, it's going to form stable bubbles. So it's going to make a foam there that's not going to go away that easily.
Interesting.
That's one of the reasons that, as I understand it, it's one of the reasons that certain beers are capable of holding a better head than others. So. Hmm. That could be the problem there.
Well,
but I could be wrong. I thought I was wrong once before, but I was mistaken.
I'm gonna Patty. I apologize to Patty. She's been trying to call, but for some reason, I'm not able to get her in. So we're going to give Patty a call. So see if I can't get her in here. A darned...
One too many meads.
One too many meads. Well, it just seems like every time I turn around, there's something different. It doesn't even let me make a darn call. I mean, I don't get this.
That's the problem. You're not actually turning around. It's just the mead.
Yeah. Let's try this. It just... Here we go. Let's try this. Add to group call. We're going to try calling Patty Mackey here. And Microsoft bought Skype here just, I think it was a couple of years ago. And it seems like every time I turn around, they keep updating this Hello. Thing. There she is, Patty.
Hello, this is Patty.
And this is JD, Chris, and Aaron on the Mead House. I know you've been trying to call. I apologize. If I were to take your call, it was actually going to put the other two guys on hold.
I figured there was some computer glitch.
Yeah. But thank you for the email and congratulations on the first place with that bourbon barrel.
Yeah, we've actually brewed this one 3 times now, and it's a real winner. I wouldn't change anything about it as a beer. It's a great one.
But I can
see it as a great Braggot as well. So,
what would you? Well, let's talk about the Braggot aspect. How would you go about adding the honey? I mean, would you take out some of the malt extract, or just add the honey on top of it, or how would you approach that?
I think I would leave the recipe as it's written, as a bourbon barrel porter. And even the yeast, because you don't want to unbalance the beer part of it. You want to keep that character. Right. And I think I would probably go about step feeding the honey in so as not to overwhelm the yeast.
Yeah, see, that's the part that I'm afraid of, because I don't want to go overboard with the alcohol either. I want to keep it right around 10%. You know, I don't want people keeling over after drinking one bottle of, you know.
As a beer, this one ends up around 9.5 already.
Oh, does it? Oh, holy cow.
Yeah, I say stun them. I'm putting the honey in all at once. I want them to know. I want those yeast to know what their role is from the very beginning.
It may stall on you.
Yeah, here it is.
Because the beer yeast is just, not. You're going to end up with something in 1.110 probably is a starting gravity. Somewhere around 6 to 8 pounds of honey. If you want to make a true braggot that's 51% honey and 49% beer. But you can always scale it back.
I already know for a fact that the Irish red ale will handle 10 pounds of honey in that recipe. So, because I did that one already. So that's not a problem.
Yeah. Well, maybe I just might go with the 6 pounds, a little better than 6 pounds. Just make it a full on 51%, honey braggot.
Would be higher gravity than just the would have been.
Yeah. Well, I wanted something that was nicely drinkable. I didn't want something that, I don't want something that's wine-like. I wanted something that was more beer-like. I love a good bourbon anyway, and a nicely oaked bourbon at that. And that recipe, I saw that recipe, and I kept going back to it after going through the whole list of recipes and kits, and I kept coming back to that, and it just looked intriguing. And I just thought, you know what? I need to do this as a braggot. I love that braggot that Aaron sent me. And I think this may be my calling to mead, because I just have not been satisfied with some of the other things that I've done. Curious.
One braggot before. And that was that Northern Brewer kit.
Yeah.
It was okay.
What bourbon did you use?
Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark, okay. That seems to be a pretty popular one. Did you use that on all three of them?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a reason why you chose Maker's Mark, or you just kind of went along with everybody else?
That's my husband's favorite.
That's your... Okay.
But yeah, I made this first as a 50th birthday present for him.
Awesome.
And he liked it so well, we rebrewed it again the following year for his birthday, and that's the one that got entered in the local contest, and it took first place in that category.
Wow. And you did it just strictly according to the recipe?
Yep.
Wow. Wow,
I got to agree with Patty on this one. You're wanting to stay with the more beer-like, and I agree with Patty. You shouldn't diminish the amount of malt extract in lieu of honey.
Yeah, you lose the base beer that you're going for unbalance it like that.
What do you think, Aaron? Do you think that's a good call? Just leave it as is and dump the honey in?
You know, I think it's definitely a good point, because, I think the beer character that you're going for is something you definitely would want to preserve. And, I think earlier Patty had mentioned possibly doing the step feeding of the honey. That may be a good kind of hybrid approach as well. I think it certainly doesn't hurt to try.
Well, here's another thought. Get your kit and brew it as a beer. And then you must have some just traditional mead sitting around, because the other way of going about making a braggot is to simply blend a beer and a mead.
That's
you could take a portion of your beer kit and blend in some sack mead, and you'd have a very good idea of what you'd have as a braggot.
Yeah.
And then you'd have separate and blended before you ever ferment them together.
Yeah.
That's a valid way to make a braggot.
I know, I don't, I have no doubt that I'm going to enjoy it. I mean, provided everything works out, you know, according to plan. But my first braggot was the one that Aaron had sent me, and I really liked it. You know, we talked about it earlier in the show. My only, I guess it's not really even a negative. I just wish it was a little more hops to it. A little more beer quality to it, a little more beer character maybe and flavor. But other than that, it was outstanding. I loved it. Like I said, that's the recipe I'm going to do. And Patty, thanks for the call. I think you just settled this completely for me.
Well, I guarantee you'll love it as a beer. And I can picture it as a braggot, so yeah. I'll be interested to see how that turns out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to answer Chris's question, I haven't started my Cherry Melomel yet. My son and his wife bought a new house, and for the last 3 months I've been remodeling a house, so I haven't even started my Cherry Melomel yet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, good luck with it, and that's that recipe that I sent you, that's one that I make over and over, and it's proven, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. They just got moved in over Labor Day weekend, so now I'm free to go back to brewing.
Yeah, don't slip on the honey, though, because that gravity needs to be way on up there to balance with that much tart cherry, so don't be scared of the high gravity.
No, that's never scared me off before. I've done stuff as high as 1170.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
you're going to be up in that area. You're going to be close to that. So, probably like,
you and Chris.
1160.
I'm anxious to try my new temperature controlled stainless brewer. So
you're going to
all I got put on hold when the kids bought a new house.
Yeah. Well, you're going to enjoy that for sure.
Yeah, that's got to be like torture to have a new toy like that and not be able to use it right away.
I know. It's sitting there in the middle of my living room still, and I see it every day. But
oh, boy. Okay. Well, hey, Patty, thanks a million, and you just settled it for me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to brew that recipe. I'm going to add the honey to it. It's going to be a 51%, stay with the style. It's a done deal. So all I have to do now is just figure out what bourbon I want to use. I have several that I do enjoy, but I want to be very careful about which ones I choose too. So, appreciate the call, Patty, and call us again anytime we're on here Tuesday nights.
Yep, I get off and listen in though. To the recorded version too. So.
Very good.
Take it easy, Patty. Good to hear from you.
Thanks for the call, Patty.
Oh, yeah. Cherry.
Oh, we missed it there. You were cut out a little bit there. Say it again. Do we lose Patty? Oh, there she goes. Okay. She was cutting out there a little bit at the end, but. Certainly appreciate Patty calling the show. Patty's been a long time listener here at the Mead House. I got this email a long time ago, and somebody had visited our website, and they asked if we could do a segment on carbonating. And I told him, well, we'll put it on the list. I really don't know much about it, but, we'll see what we can do. Well, I still don't know a whole lot about it. But I hear people talking about volume of CO2. Now, let me see if I can explain this to you. there are 22.4 liters in one mole of gas. So a beer carbonated to two volumes of CO2 will have about 0.0892 moles of gas per liter. That makes 1.688 moles of gas in 5 gallons at two volumes. That is equal to about 0.163 pounds of CO2. One volume is 1 liter of CO2 at one atmosphere, about 15 pounds in 1 liter of fluid beer. Did you get that?
Got it.
Can you repeat that?
I have no idea, okay? you know, people talk about volume. How many volumes, you know, how many volumes of carbonation did you add? Really? Volumes? I don't know, about 8 gallons. How does that sound? How many volumes? I have no idea. Here's the deal, okay? I know that, you know, you can add... It seems like all the recipes that I've looked at and everybody that I've you know, post on Homebrew Talk, I'm, you know, looking at people's recipes, people talking about carbonating. If you're going to bottle your stuff, if you don't have a keg set up, it looks to me like anywhere from 4 to 5 ounces of priming sugar. Now, it's pretty important to use this priming sugar, corn sugar, basically. Dissolved in hot water, let it cool down just a little bit, okay, and then put it in your priming bucket just before, a good time to do it actually is when you're racking into your bottling bucket, you know, put your priming sugar, you know, solution in, mix it up really, really good, and then go ahead and bottle. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you know, and you should have some carbonated beer. Now, the other method that Chris and I have talked about involves a kegging system, and you simply keg your product and hook your CO2 cartridge or canister up to it. Cartridge, you know where that comes from? Being a kid with a BB gun, CO2 cartridge. But hook your CO2 tank up to it and crank the pressure up to about 25 to 30 pounds and tip it over on its side and just gently rock it back and forth for about 10 minutes. You don't have to shake it up. You don't have to agitate the crap out of it. Just gently rock it back and forth. Do that for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. There's really no time frame. And then stand it upright. Leave it at 25 pounds, 30 pounds for about 24 hours. And then take a taste the next day and see what you get. It worked for me. It's how I carbonated my wife's porter. And like I said, it worked just fine. So I turned the regular down. My serving pressure is about 9.5 pounds. It keeps the beer nicely carbonated. It's got a nice head on it when it comes out of the tap into the glass. And that's about as much as I know about carbonating. So, Chris, Aaron, if you guys got something more to add,
well, as far as carbonating with a keg, I haven't done a lot with it, but the things that I have done have all come with a suggested pressure or volume. So, I've got this hydromel, this fruit hydromel that I do that's carbonated, and it's 3 volumes. So I've got this chart that I look on, and it tells me what pressure to set it at based on my altitude above sea level. So
and temperature, right?
And temperature, yes. And basically, everything I've done, I've been told how to do it. So I haven't done a lot of experimenting with it. When I first got the keg, I just wanted to play around with it and see what it would do. So I filled it up with water and carbonated it, and it spewed everywhere, and I found out that I better follow the instructions. So that's what I did ever since.
Yeah. Aaron, have you, well, I know you carbonate stuff, but what's your method of?
So I don't have a kegging system, and all of the carbonation I've done is just bottle conditioning. So usually what I do is 5 ounces of priming sugar, just as you described earlier, and I think you did a real good job covering that process. You know, I'll just boil a small amount of water, add in that priming sugar, let it cool, and then rack on top of that in the bottling bucket, and then put that in the bottles, and away we go. Like you say, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, just a small fermentation occurs inside the bottle, and because it's still sealed in the bottle, the carbon dioxide that's released from the yeast remains trapped in the bottle and just produces a nice, naturally carbonated beer. So that's the method I usually use.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's another issue that we need to address here about our Braggot project is the fact of when we do this. Now, with a Braggot, as I said before, the other one that I made, it required some aging in the carboy before it was ready to be bottled and drinkable. Sure. And so what we're going to have an issue with is how long are we going to have to age it? And then if you decide to bottle condition it, of course, I know you've got a kegging system, but for those people who don't, you're going to have to ask yourself, is this yeast still viable? So it could be one of those situations where you need to add in some yeast at bottling time in order to get that bottle conditioning effect. Otherwise, the residual yeast that's left in your Braggot may not be viable any longer. True. Especially if you let this thing age for a year or more before you bottle it. So
yeah. Well, and I'm not anticipating letting mine age that long. I'm hoping that it won't take that long. Good thought.
I wish I had taken better notes or could find my notes on the Braggots I've done. I definitely did not let it age that long, but it was in the secondary for a while. I would say probably 4 to 5 months. And with that amount of time, I was able to get a nice bottle conditioning going. But Chris, that's absolutely a good point. If we are aging these for a significant amount of time, that's certainly one way to go, is just pitch a little bit of fresh yeast at the time of bottling.
Well, and they
there's a little option too, JD. A third option is these little, bottling, what do they call them, fizz drops or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just a measured amount of sugar. And I think they even make some little capsules that have a combination of sugar and yeast. And
yeah,
you basically bottle your beer or whatever, and you drop one in each bottle, and
right,
you're guaranteed fresh yeast and enough priming sugar for that bottle. So third option. And I may actually go with that. It's just a lot less trouble than mixing up priming sugar and more than likely a lot more accurate.
Well, and the one thing about priming sugar that we should probably mention too, this is not a matter, especially if you're, just learning about this and doing it for the first time. You just can't use warm water and think you're going to dissolve the sugar and put it in your bottling bucket. It needs to be boiled for at least 5 minutes, because the priming sugar, may come with some, bacteria that you just don't, you don't want to add to your recipe. So you need to boil it for at least 5 minutes. And everything that I've read about doing this is, boil the water. you know, when you put your priming sugar in, bring it to a boil, and boil it for 5 minutes. So be sure to do that at least. It's clear to me that, you know, we're a ways off. I mean, this Braggot recipe isn't going to come together next week for sure. I mean, there's still, I think, a lot more that we need to do. More reading. Patty Mackey, she helped me make my decision tonight on the honey dilemma. I'm just going to go with, you know, an equal, actually 51%, 6.5 pounds, I guess it would be, and call it done. But I still need to learn more about the hops. I need to make my bourbon selection. So there's a lot more to be done. So, and I know you two probably have, some reading and some, you know, fine tuning that you guys want to do as well. But, that being said, I kind of wanted to touch on one of Chris's favorite styles, because we're coming upon the season, Chris. Apple season.
Sizers. Yes.
What absolutely. Is a sizer? And this is why I wish Jeff was here to, you know, go through and explain the whole sizer thing to us, as our resident mead judge and whatnot. But sizers are basically what, Chris?
Well, to me, it's a traditional mead where you take out the water and replace it with apple juice. And that's a very simple explanation. Now, there's all sorts of things you can add in with it, and all sorts of different apple juices that you can use. I think the blend of apples is everything in a sizer. Unfortunately, here in the United States, we have a very limited selection, although that is improving slowly as the cider industry sort of kicks in and becomes more popular. A lot of the growers are turning to cider apples again. You know, back before Prohibition, we had a good selection of cider apples in this country, and then when Prohibition came along, the apple growers needed a way to stay in business, so they did away with all the cider apple trees and planted dessert apples. So now all the supermarkets are overrun with Red Delicious and
oh my God, yeah,
and all that kind of thing. So and it pretty much wiped out the cider apple business in the United States. And but it's slowly coming back. People are rediscovering cider, and it's becoming. I think it may end up being the next craft beer type boom, you know, in this country, and so it's definitely coming back.
I think you're right. I mean, the whole cider, I've noticed in liquor stores and my supermarkets, down the beer aisle, there used to be maybe one or two 6-packs of hard ciders, and then there was three or four. Now there's a whole frickin' shelf full of them.
We have lots of specialty beer stores around, and there's at least, I would say 25% of their stock now is some sort of sizer or some sort of
cider. Yeah.
Yeah. And, so, you know, I think one of these days, I think mead is going to have that same kind of boom if we can ever all get our act together and get everybody educated on what it is and what it should be, and get people to approach it with an open mind. But back to the sizer issue, in its simplest form, it's apple juice and honey. But from there, you can just basically go wild with it. You can make an entirely different sizer by changing the profile of apple juice, different kind of apple juice, much the same way you can change a traditional with just changing the honey or just changing the yeast. So, you know, it's in this big complex thing that we've been talking about and how many variations, almost limitless. Now you just add a whole nother level of complexity to it by adding in apple juice.
Yeah.
And you can make all sorts of sizers. I mean, it's just really limitless almost. And, you know, what I really enjoy about them is that they're so easy to ferment. You don't really have the stuck fermentation problems with sizers that you do with traditionals. In fact, if you're, you know, we were talking earlier about the foam overs and meat eruptions and things, got to be careful with a sizer because they ferment vigorously. Something about apples that yeast like, and but I really want to get into that when the season gets here. It's kind of the reason I wanted to hurry up and get this Braggot going, because I want to get that pretty much squared away by apple season.
Does your wife like sizers?
Oh yeah, absolutely, and well, cider too.
Then you go to her tonight, Chris, and you tell her that, honey, I'm going to make your favorite sizer. I need a stainless steel fermenter. It worked for me.
I can't go stainless steel. No, that's
No.
I think I've got some kind of mojo against stainless steel fermenters for me. I've fermented in plastic buckets for so long.
Okay, another plastic bucket, yeah.
Yeah. So I might be able to talk her into letting me buy another bucket, though.
There you go. Yeah, spring another $12 for another bucket.
Yeah, can I borrow right. $12? But anyway, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. Sizers are just they're so simple and easy to do, and but yet you can make them so complicated, and you can go so far with them. I think we're going to have fun with it, and just like this Braggot thing, it's going to be a step. You know, I've already done a lot of variations of sizers. And so this year, I think I want to really try something different. I really want to go far out with it and do something I've never done before. I think I mentioned to you that I'm actually going to be working on a homemade apple press so I can press my own apples. And
We want pictures. We want documented.
Absolutely.
Let's get it up on our website.
Yeah, we'll get some blueprints for it.
There you go.
We'll see what we can get drawn up, and everybody can make a. You know, another day I saw a homemade apple grinder, so I may end up making both, and then I can grind them and then press them. And
there you go.
The sizers can really. That's a huge area for us to get into. We could talk for weeks and weeks about it.
Well, I wanted to get an early start because, you know, like I said, we're right around the corner. I don't know about your neck of the woods, but apple season is coming on here, out here where we're at. So usually October, November, that's it for us. So that's right around the corner. But I thought we'd get an early start and at least get it, start talking about it. And we'll probably go in a little more depth. On future shows, and then start talking about putting some recipes together. But
I usually make my sizers in October. It's usually getting close to Halloween. That's when I do my sizers.
You know, that's like next month, right?
Yeah, I know. That's why I want to get this Braggot going. Because I don't think she's going to let me have another $12 for another bucket.
All right, and then finally, I want to wrap up tonight, Chris, with the cherry mead update. Where are we with the cherry melomel or the cherry? Actually, was it a melomel? No, it was a. I guess it is a melomel, isn't it? It's cherry.
Yeah, it's a cherry chocolate. That we ended up with. So at this point, I'm in secondary clearing. Well, I've come off of the chocolate, and I'm in technically tertiary, and I'm just letting it sit and clear for now. I've got some. I've got a little bit of oil residue on top from the chocolate, which is to be expected. It's tasting. It's going to be there. The taste is there. It needs a little bit of time to come around. You know, this was the project I was working on when my refrigerator went out. So, I lost my cooling at some point there, and I got a few fusels in there. Not too bad. I think maybe probably by Christmas this thing's going to be good. So, those of you who didn't have those cooling issues, you may already be good to go now. I'm going to let mine sit probably until December and maybe bottle it up and have it ready for Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
So pretty much we've done all the major stuff. But I will say this, everybody, you know, I gave you some leeway in the starting gravity and ending gravity. So we're going to let this thing sit for a while, and then at some point in the future, we're going to do a tasting, and we'll talk about making adjustments at that time. We need to let it settle down a little bit more, let it get a little bit more age on it, and let some of the flavors come back. Then we'll taste it, and we'll talk about possible sweetness issues. It may need a little extra sweetness. It may need some tannin adjustment. So we'll discuss all that once we give it time to kind of sit and get some age on it.
And for those of you who live this side of the Mason-Dixon line, all is oil. So just had to throw that. All is oil, O-I-L. Well, I guess that's going to pretty much wrap it up for tonight's edition of the Mead House. Kind of glad to be back from vacation here and get back in the work of things. Kind of missed Jeff tonight. I'm sure he'll be back next week. We'll be in touch with him as well. But keep thinking about those Braggot recipes. Thanks, Patty, for giving us a holler here tonight and talking Braggots with us. Congratulations again on that first place with that bourbon barrel out there. And I'm going to have to get me a bottle of Maker's Mark and just try it. I've never had it, so I got to figure that one out. So I tell you what, we'll be back next week, next Tuesday night, 9 o'clock, right here at the Mead House. You can catch up on the meadhouse.com, and of course visit the Facebook page. It's simply the Mead House. So with that, see everybody next week.
Maybe we'll strike oil.
There you go.
Well played.
All right, we're out of here.